Lagos, I don't need to introduce him anymore, but let me tell you who he is, because you've heard him, you've heard his voice, you've heard his name. Dr. Baghouti is the president of the Palestinian National Initiative. He was a former member of the Legislative Council. Okay, so he is, as you heard Dr. Gilbert said, one of the people to talk to. Let me tell you how I describe Dr. Baghouti's position, his profile, his importance, his factor. How I describe it to Nigerians in relation to Palestine. He would have been an owl, a zig. Those who negotiated Nigeria's independence, had he been Nigerian of that age, he would have been part of that negotiation. Dr. Mustapha Baghouti, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be with you.
It's great. It's great to have you. Another one. Have you been to Nigeria before?
Sorry?
Have you been to Nigeria before? Have you ever been to Nigeria?
Unfortunately, no. But I had Nigerian friends who studied with me when I was studying medicine.
Okay, great. You're also a physician, which is a medical doctor. Let's start with the hospitals, because I'm now having to rush this. So I'm going to change the format a little bit. We're going to talk about Israel's assault on the hospitals. Then we're going to talk about Israel's assault on what I'm calling cultural genocide, which is education and monuments, Palestinian monuments and museums. And then we'll take it. We'll talk about the US and the ICJ. Is that okay?
Fine.
Excellent. So, Israel, if I said Israel is conducting a war on the Palestinian health structure, would that be a correct statement? And if so, why?
Yes, absolutely correct. And I would add that they are attacking not only health facilities in Gaza, but also in the West Bank. But in Gaza, it's a terrible destruction. Since the 7th of October, 30 out of 36 hospitals were either completely destroyed or damaged. No less than 422 health facilities, including health centers, health clinics, health education facilities, were destroyed. 303 of my colleagues, doctors, nurses, and health professionals were killed while they were trying to provide medical care to the people who were injured. And many of them were killed inside 104 ambulances that were bombarded by Israeli airstrikes. So they bombarded ambulances, they bombarded hospitals, they bombarded and killed health professionals. 300 other of my colleagues have also been injured and are still receiving treatment. And many, no less than probably 90 of the health professionals were arrested by the Israeli army and put in concentration camps, many of whom are tortured badly. I can tell you one story, if you allow me.
Please go ahead.
One of my colleagues is a first aid, he's an ambulance driver. He worked with us. We have an organization, a very important one in Gaza, which is called Palestinian Medical Relief Society. And we have now 30 medical teams working there. And this guy was in front of our center, which was burned later by the Israeli tanks. And he was treating an injured person with another doctor. And when they got out of the home, a sniper saw them and shot the doctor in the abdomen. And then this guy tried to help the doctor. And unfortunately, the sniper shot the doctor again in the head and killed him. He told us, this man, that there were seven other people in the area. All of them were killed by Israeli snipers. He had to hide behind a car and then into a house for 48 hours, totally frightened to death. And then when he tried to get out, the army saw him and arrested him. They took him to a concentration camp in the Negev, near Beersheba, where he and about 1,000 other prisoners were tortured terribly. He was beaten. He came back with broken ribs. He told us they hanged him on a wall and used electrical shocks against them. They tortured them by trying to drown them in the water. The director of the Shifa Hospital, which is the largest hospital in Gaza, was also tortured in the same way. And he is still, by the way, in prison. And he said that they were interrogating them psychologically, physically, in the most terrible way. To the level that when he told them he was an ambulance driver, they drew on the wall an ambulance and told him, ride in the ambulance and go and bring us to know. This is the kind of, he was tortured for 3 weeks before he was released. But he also told us that many of the prisoners there died because of torture. In another occasion, another one of our medical workers was arrested with 90 other people inside Gaza City. The Israeli army told them, we will direct a light on you. If the light is white, go away. If it's yellow, stay. Wow. If it's red, go to the right. Those who got the red light were 16 people, including two brothers. And without questioning, without interrogation, without anything, they were just field executed, shot to death in front of the others. And we are receiving lots of information about this kind of assassination of people and execution, field execution without any kind of justification. But the medical facilities are also attacked in another way. Much of our infrastructure have been destroyed. Lots of equipment have been destroyed. And the attacks on hospitals is consistent. Each time the Israeli army arrives in an area, they will bombard the hospital and kill many people. And as you know, many people try to take refuge in the surrounding of the hospital because every place is bombarded and there are no safe spaces for people. But one of the results of what's happened is that we lost a lot of kids who were in incubators because of lack of electricity. They died, or lack of oxygen. Many, I as a medical doctor, I never thought in my life that in the 21st century, I will hear my colleagues tell me that they had to amputate a leg of a man without anesthesia because the Israelis are not allowing anesthetic drugs into Gaza. Or operating on a child without anesthesia. Horrible stories. And the most important thing also is that now we have 400,000 sick people in Gaza because of the outbreak of epidemics due to lack of water, lack of destruction of sewage systems. Palestinian Medical Relief reported now almost 1,000 cases of hepatitis A, which is happening because of poor hygiene. And we have 50,000 cases of skin diseases and a lot of gastroenteric problems. We are worried about our outbreak of measles and maybe polio among children because all vaccinations stopped since the 7th of October. So there is a horrible attack on the whole health system, but especially on hospitals.
Yesterday, we need to talk about the schools, UN schools, you know, you name it. I've seen videos of the statue of Yasser Arafat being destroyed. And yesterday we saw Israel bomb. And some have suggested, because one of the US journalists actually suggested that that wasn't a bomb, that it was a planned demolition. What do you think?
Yes, of course, Israel is destroying so many architecture, so many structures in Gaza, especially anything that has and shows heritage of Palestinians. But the biggest problem is that they have already destroyed 70% of the homes in Gaza. 70% of all homes are destroyed. And all the infrastructure is destroyed. Water pipelines are destroyed. Telecommunication structures are destroyed. We have had a complete blackout on and a total block of all communications with Gaza for the last 8 days. And in addition to destroying not only homes, they destroyed all universities. As we said, many of the hospitals, many of the health facilities. And it goes on. And of course, lots of things are stolen, not just destroyed. People's homes are invaded. people's belongings are also stolen, as we were told by many people. It's horrible. It's a complete indiscriminate attack against everything that is Palestinian in Gaza.
Let's talk about the settlers, the Israeli settlers, and what they're doing in the West Bank. And also, it's because we don't have time, because I'd like, if it's possible, for you to also tell us why Jerusalem is so important to the Palestinians.
Jerusalem has always been the capital of Palestine. And Jerusalem hosts three main religions, of course. It's Islam, Christianity, as well as Judaism. And the Palestinians, when they opted for two-state solution, were ready to accept that the East Jerusalem would be the capital of Palestine and West Jerusalem could become the capital of Israel. But Israelis don't want that. Jerusalem is the main city for Palestinians from every perspective, culturally, religiously, touristic-wise. It was always a major economic center before the Israelis besieged it, preventing most of us in the West Bank from reaching it. It contained the major hospitals in the country, and it was the most important cultural place for Palestinians. And it's also, it includes two of the holiest places in the world for Christians and Muslims, the Holy Sepulchral Church and the Aqsa Mosque, which is like the second most important holy place for all Muslims in the world. So it's a very vital area. And Jerusalem was the reason why Camp David negotiations failed, because Israel would not allow Palestinians to have Jerusalem as their capital, as a sovereign capital for Palestinians. So it's the heart of it's the heart city for all Palestinians. Jerusalem is the place that everybody wants to go to. And let me tell you, there is a huge amount of discrimination. Palestinian Christians and Muslims are not allowed to have free access to Jerusalem since 1992. I myself was born in Jerusalem. I worked as a medical doctor in one of its major hospitals for 15 years. And since 2005, when I ran for president, they prevent me from going to Jerusalem. They forbid us from doing so, like 90, maybe 95% of all Palestinians.
Let's talk about the Israeli settlers. We've seen an increasing number of settlers and settlements, which is combined with violence against Palestinians in the West Bank, and especially farmers who, you know, who are just growing olives and tendering to their groves.
Yes. To understand the issue of settlers, you have to understand that Israel is nothing but a settler colonial project. It was initiated in the 19th century. I mean, it started to be initiated in the 19th century. At that time, the Jewish people were only a very small minority in Palestine. But the British and many other colonial countries tried to push as many Jewish people into Palestine. And Balfour Declaration was declared that promised Palestine to become the Jewish homeland for Jewish people, without considering the fact that 90% of the population were Palestinians. So Israel was established through settlement building. Now, in 1967, Israel also occupied the West Bank. Not only, the United Nations decided there should be a two-state solution where Palestinians should have a state of their own on the 44% of Palestine. Yet, when Palestinians signed the Oslo Agreement with Israel, it was assumed that this would lead to two-state solution. And Palestinians accepted a very painful compromise where they would have a state, a small state, and 22% only of the land in the West Bank and Gaza. But Israel continued to build settlements in the West Bank. And the number of settlers increased from 120,000 in 1993 to more than 750,000 today. They are armed, they behave as gangs, they attack Palestinian communities, they try to evict people from their land, they cut off our trees, they destroy farms, they shoot at people, since the 7th of October, they killed 23 Palestinians, and the army protects them instead of preventing them from attacking the Palestinians. In one case, I'll give you an example, a village called Qusra in Nablus. The army, the settlers attacked the village, killed three people. The army came and killed a fourth Palestinian.
Wow.
And next morning, when they were holding a funeral of the four people killed, the settlers came back again and shot two more Palestinians, a father and a son. And it goes on. So settler terror is an instrument that the Israeli government is using to try to evict Palestinians from their homes and conduct ethnic cleansing. To understand the Israeli policy, I could mention what Smotrich, the finance minister of Israel, said when his new cabinet was formed with Netanyahu. He said, "We will fill the West Bank with settlements and settlers so that Palestinians would lose any hope of a state of their own. And then they will have, Palestinians will have one of three options, either to leave, which is ethnic cleansing, or accept a life of subjugation to Israelis, which is apartheid, or die, which is exactly what they are doing now in Gaza, which is that is genocide. The Israeli problem is that our number now on the land of historic Palestine is equal to Israeli Jewish people, 7 million versus 7 million, although we have 7 million other Palestinians who were evicted from Palestine in 1948 by an Israeli ethnic cleansing act. So the solution can only be one of two things. Either we have two-state solution, and we have our independent state, and we coexist peacefully. Or one democratic state where people can have equal rights, but one democratic state cannot be Jewish-only state. The Israeli army and government have a different plan. Their plan is to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. And the main goal of the attack on Gaza was to try to evict 2.3 million people from their homeland into Egypt. And that has failed, of course, because of the resilience of the Palestinian people.
You yourself, you've been a victim of, you know, arrest by Israel where they broke your kneecap and did all sorts of atrocities to you. Yesterday, the Washington Post did an article called "Gazan Prisoners Describe Abuse at Secretive Israeli Detention." Of course, when, you know, people talk about the Israeli hostages, of which there are 120 something left in Gaza, we must also talk about Palestinians who are held without any form of justice, which effectively is a form of hostage taking. But let me just read out two of those the Gazan prisoners that spoke, what they said. Jihad Hamouda said he spent 17 days blindfolded and handcuffed in an Israeli detention facility, made to kneel on the ground for hours. He said Israeli soldiers stormed his home in Gaza City on December 8th. They fatally shot his grandmother and rounded up his sisters, cousins, uncles and grandmother. Sometimes, Hamouda remembered, a detainee does not return until he is covered in blood or has traces of torture on him or screams and cries from the intensity of the pain. Other times, Gazans accused of Hamas connections are sent to another facility, he said. He initially spent more than a day in confinement where he was stripped to his underwear. Interrogators beat him, and when he denied being involved with Hamas, one threatened to cut off his finger. Quote, "I assured them that I was a university student and had no connection to any military organizations." I could go on. There are so many testimonies. Over to you, Dr. Barghouti.
Absolutely. What you have described is part of what we know. And by the way, it's not just in the West, in the Gaza Strip, but also in the West Bank, where since the 7th of October, Israel has conducted arrests of no less than 5,500 new people. Many were arrested, tortured, some were released, some were kept in jail. Mostly they are under the so-called administrative detention, which means Israel can keep anybody for an unlimited period of time, which could reach even 10 years without charges, without any legal due process. At this moment, we have 8,000 Palestinian prisoners who are living in horrible conditions in West Bank, and more than 3,000 in Gaza. And those who were arrested in Gaza are taken to Israel itself in these concentration camps, where they are subjected to what you have just described. But the 8,000 prisoners in the West Bank are tortured also in other ways. They are beaten regularly. They are deprived of sufficient food. They are not allowed to change their clothes. All of them have been in the same clothes since the 7th of October. They are deprived from the possibility of getting out of the cells where they are kept. And because of the torture they are subjected to, we already lost 7 of our prisoners inside prisons in the West Bank. Israel behaves with a feeling of complete and total impunity, and they think they can do anything to any Palestinian. The media is full with videos of Israeli soldiers and Israeli people calling for total genocide of all Palestinians. I can say that now Israel is not just a racist country, not only conducting the worst system of apartheid, much worse than what prevailed in South Africa, but it is actually a fascist system. They are fascists in every sense of the word, and they abide by no law, and they are encouraged continuously by their leaders to commit all these crimes against the Palestinian civilian population. They are attacking. Yesterday, they attacked the Tul Karim camp, destroyed roads, homes, businesses, and then they detained 500 people from the refugee camp in one building where they were beaten and interrogated continuously. They simply feel they can do anything to any Palestinian.
Which brings me on to the ICJ. First of all, tell us, how did you feel when you first heard, because I'm presuming you heard before we did in the media, when you heard about the South Africans taking Israel to court for genocidal actions and also demanding their preliminary demand is for an immediate ceasefire? When you heard that for the first time, how did it make you feel? And what do you expect from the outcome from the ICJ?
Well, we do hope that the court would be objective enough to exactly take the right decision that genocide is happening in Gaza and that Israel must stop this genocide as soon as possible. But we were not surprised that South Africa took the case to the court. South African people are more capable of understanding the suffering of the Palestinian people because they were subjected to the same suffering. They were victims of a settler colonial system. They were victims of an apartheid, like we are. And the Palestinians have always been in solidarity with South Africa in its struggle for ending apartheid. But more important, I must say, that the South African appeal to the ICJ has opened the eyes of so many people in the world to the reality of what's happening, which is the act of genocide. And it is not a coincidence that Israel now is accusing South Africa of being, in the most silly kind of accusation, saying that South Africa is an instrument of Hamas. But the Israelis are mad because they remember their history. They remember how Israel cooperated with the apartheid government in South Africa and how they exchanged information with the intelligence apartheid system in South Africa and how Israel conducted with the South African apartheid regime nuclear tests near the area of South Africa. And they know very well that the prime minister of the apartheid system in 1963 described Israel as, he said, Israel is also like South Africa, an apartheid state. So, of course, Israelis know very well what they have done to the South African people by allying themselves with the worst kind of system of apartheid. And they are simply repeating the same kind of oppression against Palestinian people. We do hope that ICJ really would come up with a conclusion that as it should be, and expose Israel as a country that is committing genocide in the 21st century. Not just exposing them, but also demanding sanctions.
Indeed.
Boycott, divestment, sanctions. That's what should happen to Israel. Like there was BDS campaign, boycott, divestment, sanction against the apartheid system in South Africa.
We need to talk about gaslighting. I have to say, as a journalist, one of the videos that has riled me was your interview, and I literally almost threw my phone at the wall. I can see you smiling. Was your interview with Julia Hartley Brewer, who is Lagos, Nigeria. If you don't know who that is, she is a host, she's a journalist, broadcast journalist in the UK, and she interviewed Dr. Barghouti. Right? Now,
all right.
I can't even begin to describe what disgust we had to see and witness from that woman. But perhaps the worst of all was when she said, or she implied, well, I'm sorry, you must be upset because I'm a female. And then there's Piers Morgan. So talk to us about the gaslighting of the Western media.
Well, look, since this war started, and as we have had similar experiences before, they are trying to silence us. They don't want to hear the plight of the Palestinian people. And they don't want us to speak about our suffering. They have them sometimes to make interviews with us to look as if they were balanced. But of course, what they do, they take 20 Israelis and then bring a Palestinian. I never refuse to appear on Western media because I think I have to use every corner and every little opportunity to bring the truth to the people. This is my duty. But in the case of this lady, she was racist.
Yes, she was.
She assumed that I am, who is a Palestinian, is also an Arab and a Muslim. And she assumed in the most Orientalist way that the Arabs and Muslims do not respect women and don't listen to women. But I tell you, she was not only racist, she was absolutely ignorant. Because had she done little research, all she had to do is just to Google me or look at who is my wife to realize how silly her accusation was. Because I am known that in all my life, I've been one of the biggest advocates, maybe the biggest advocate of women's rights in Palestine and in the Arab world. I've been engaging with the organization that I'm leading for years in acts against gender-based violence and against any form of discrimination against women. One thing I am so proud of is that the organization we lead has 63% of its employees women. You know, it's outrageous because, in my opinion, what this lady did was not only insulting Arab men, but she was insulting Arab women, who are doctors, nurses, advocates, writers, artists, filmmakers. They have been doing wonderful work all the time. And she was so ignorant because had she just done a little research, she would have found that my wife is the most published researcher in Palestine. She's a community leader. She founded the community health department in Beer Sheva University. She's a professor. And, you know, ironically, she got two honorary PhDs from two most famous British universities, London School of Economics and King's College. I mean, how could she say that I cannot listen to women when I have all these people with me?
Indeed. I mean, look.
By the way, my daughter also is a very strong advocate of women's rights. Mm. My daughter as well.
Yes.
Who's also an academic.
I think what was most comforting to me, and like I said, you know, as a journalist, was the way everybody responded to her and demanded that she be sacked or removed from that position. Unfortunately, she hasn't been. And look, it's the truth.
The case is going on because there are 14,500 complaints to Ofcom, the regulator.
Yes, in Britain.
And there we also have a case with her station up till now.
Excellent. We're, Talk TV.
Yeah.
People must know it's owned by Rupert Murdoch, and you know, if you like, go and do the homework and you'll know who Rupert Murdoch is. So that was what I was going to ask you, if indeed they've reached out to you. So you're going to be finding out very soon, I presume, what the outcome is from the complaints.
Can you hold on for a moment, please? Hello? Yeah. Hello?
Lagos, we're about to come. I don't think we can take any questions because we've got a game that's coming on. I think that's an emergency call, so he had to take it. You know, he is in a war zone, so you must bear that in mind. Yeah, we can't take any questions. I can't take any calls. I need to wrap up with Dr. Barghouti.
Yes, sorry.
No worries at all.
That was an urgent call. I'm sorry.
You're not at all. You're in a war zone, so calls will come in at any time. Listen, we're about to close. We've got, 4 minutes left. Tell us, I had Noor Ode last week, and one of the things that I said to her is, it must feel so exhausting to be a Palestinian. How do you carry on? Really, how do you carry on?
Well, you know, yes, we get exhausted because, and especially when you have this such a long war and so many atrocities, and so many heartbreaking stories. But you know what? Sometimes you feel so exhausted and so tired. And then you look at a picture of a child, or you hear about a case of a person. And then you feel that you are re-energized again because you have a duty to do. And I think that's exactly how I feel. We can't rest, unfortunately, because we have to stop this genocide. We have to stop this atrocity. We are humans, of course. We get tired, but we take a little rest and then start again. But there is no way we can stop without stopping this atrocity against our people.
Thank you so, so much for giving up your time, Dr. Barghouti, Mustafa Gapa. Thank you. We will send you an invitation for you to come back because we have to discuss the Palestinian politics. People need to understand. Thank you so much.
With pleasure.
Thank you. You have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Lagos, that's the end of another episode of Borderlines. Well, edition, actually, not an episode. It's an edition because it's not a continuation, you know. Anyway, that's the end of another edition of Borderlines. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you've been educated. Make sure you make it a date with us. I'm handing over to the football gang now. They're not going to be talking about Liverpool this time, thank God, because I'm so not happy with them. They don't respect my team. But look, join us next week for another informative, educative, engaging show. That's Borderlines. We go beyond borders to where others will not go. Until next week, thank you. Bye-bye.